well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Alan Gottlieb, head of the Second Amendment Foundation, going to be with us on the program here in just a minute. We're going to be talking about last weekend's gun rights policy conference held in San Diego. But we're also going to be looking ahead to what Gottlieb is concerned about when it comes to a potential Kamala Harris administration. We'll get to that. Actually, you know what? No need to delay. Let's hop right to the conversation with Alan Gottlieb of the Second Amendment Foundation. Take a look and listen. Alan, it's so good to see you again. Thanks so much for coming on the program today.
Oh, it's always my pleasure, Cam. Thank you.
Absolutely. I'm sorry that I could not be in San Diego last weekend for the Gun Rights Policy Conference in person, but once again, it sounds like it was an absolutely incredible weekend for Second Amendment supporters.
It really was. I wish you could have been there. You really, really would have enjoyed it. It was really enlightening, entertaining. It had a feel to it that was very special. I don't know if that was partially because it was in California, where, you know, it's the eye of the storm, so to speak, or if we had a lot of new attendees, first-time people. Half the audience had never attended one before, and we had a different format of it with some fireside chats and longer remarks from speakers, less speakers, but they got to go more in-depth, and I think the audience really enjoyed that a lot.
Was there a theme that you saw either organically or that was sort of part of, meant to be a part of the Gun Rights Policy Conference this year?
Well, the theme of it really was empower, educate, and defend. But, you know, it had a lot of sub-themes to it, I think, that the attendees brought with them, particularly in going into a lot of the anti-gun states, you know, like Massachusetts, where we discussed a lot of going on there and how to combat it. One of the highlights, of course, was Congressman Daryl Issa, who's the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, who gave an address and then had a fireside chat as well. And he talked a lot about, you know, where we've come from in the last, you know, a couple of years under the Biden-Harris administration to where we're going, depending upon if Trump wins or if Harris wins the election. He also got the Gun Rights Defender of the Year Award for all his work on Capitol Hill, you know, herding cats, so to speak, to push gun rights legislation. It had a more cozy feel to it. I think there's a lot more people, you know, during the breaks and in the hallways and at the receptions, networking. And that's not on the agenda normally, but I think the networking is something that really pays out over time for the gun rights movement.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, you mentioned that this was held in California, right? This was in San Diego. So the opportunity for these gun owners to get together and to do some networking, whether they live in the state of California, they live around the country, you know, that is, I think, a key component to our Second Amendment activism. It is simply, you know, being able to sit in a room with some folks that we might read them, we might watch their podcasts or their YouTube videos, but to actually get a chance to sit down and have a conversation and ask those questions. Okay, what's going on where you live? What are you doing? What's working? You know, those conversations, I think, are absolutely invaluable.
They really, really were. And I was really, you know, I do this every day all year long. And I learned a lot from being at the conference because there's a lot going on the state level that nobody knows about. And of course, even as intricately involved I am in all the legal battles, a lot of the key attorneys that were there doing our litigation, not only directly talked about the lawsuits that we have filed currently, but in depth about the strategies and where we're going with it and how the other side is trying to counter us, knowing the fact that we keep winning in court.
Yeah, and those wins are adding up. I know that, you know, this has been a long process for those of us who have been in the Second Amendment movement pre-Heller, right? We can see how far we've come. But you know, for those folks who were thinking that Heller was going to be the end all be all, or maybe Bruin was going to be the end all be all, we have seen this resistance in blue states like Massachusetts, New Jersey, California, where, you know, again, Alan, it is so crystal clear that they don't want to recognize the individual right to keep and bear arms. They don't want to finally acknowledge that, yes, this is a fundamental civil right, because if they do that, I mean, again, their whole agenda falls apart, right? Then they're the bad guys, first of all, because they're the ones that have been infringing on these rights for decades. But also, how do you advance this anti-gun agenda? How do you curtail lawful gun ownership when you acknowledge that, yes, this is a civil right that we're talking about? I think they have no choice but to continue advocating and arguing that, no, this isn't a real right. It doesn't really exist. We'll overturn Heller if we get the chance, and bring us back to the bad old days when the court said, oh, no, there is no individual right to keep and bear arms. Their strategies may have changed, but to paraphrase Kamala Harris, their values have not, right?
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm glad you mentioned New Jersey. I just want to bring up one thing. John Petrolino made a presentation at the, he writes for you sometimes. He made a presentation at GRPC about New Jersey. And it's interesting, you know, a few years back, New Jersey had a handful or maybe at most 100 concealed carry permits the state issued. And now there's somewhere around 70,000. So that's to show the kind of progress we've made, even in the anti-gun states. I mean, it's kicking and screaming for them issuing them, but they're getting issued now. And we're winning even in the really bad, dark blue states, so to speak, with the gun confiscation lobby and total control. We're making progress in all these states, and it's really exciting.
It is. And I don't know if John detailed, he's been working on some research. He's published a couple of pieces of Bearing Arms talking about how New Jersey has handled the switch to shall issue. And it sure sounds like there are still a lot of problems there. Even in shall issue New Jersey, you've got denial rates for black applicants that I think are at least twice that of white applicants. So there may be, and I think this is maybe one of the other themes here, that even with these successes that we've seen, there is still obviously a lot of pushback when it comes to our right to keep arms. And so there is the opportunity to keep litigating and to keep undoing some of these, hopefully all of these infringements on our fundamental rights.
Yeah, John actually shared a lot of that research at the Gun Rights Policy Conference. I think it's actually 2.5 times more denials for African Americans than for the general public. And there's lots of problems there. And he went through a litany of how he tried to work with the governor's office and the AG's office to get them to, stop the systematic racism, so to speak, when it comes to issuing concealed carry permits, and how they tried to ignore him. And it was very interesting. It was informative, but it also laid out a platform for other states, gun rights activists, to be able to try and push those kinds of anti-discrimination tactics being used other places as well.
Yeah. And that, again, I think is going to be so critically important, because, even a shall issue system, the Supreme Court acknowledged this. They said a shall issue system might be constitutional presumptively, but things like lengthy delays or exorbitant fees, they didn't specifically say discrimination in terms of who's getting permits, but I think that would certainly apply, could call even these shall issue systems into question.
Yeah, I want to, before I forget, all your viewers and listeners can go to YouTube, either the Second Amendment Foundation channel, or just put in Gun Rights Policy Conference 2024. And it's all archived on YouTube, and at their leisure, they can watch each part, each segment of it.
Yep, it is absolutely fantastic. It's a great resource. I had the chance to watch a couple of hours over the weekend, and I do want to go back and watch some of the speakers that I did not have a chance to catch. So again, Alan is absolutely right. Just go to YouTube, search for Gun Rights Policy Conference. And Alan, I mean, you talked again about some of the Darrell Issa mentioned during his speech, what the next few years look like if Donald Trump wins versus what the next few years look like if Kamala Harris wins. Kamala Harris is trying to reinvent herself. And she's not, she's saying, oh, I own a gun. If you come in my house, you're going to get shot. She's trying to, I think, camouflage her history of really extreme positions, right? I mean, in 2005, she supported San Francisco's ban on handguns, which would have required existing owners to turn them over to the local government. She said, and I think it was 2007, talking about San Francisco's gun storage law, just because you lawfully own a gun and you're in your locked home doesn't mean we can't walk in to check and see how those guns are being stored. She called the Bruin decision, said it defied common sense in the Constitution. Now she's out there saying again, I'm a gun owner. I support the Second Amendment. Oh, you sure we can ban assault weapons, quote unquote. But I support the Second Amendment. You've been around a long time, Alan. You've dealt with Kamala Harris for, you know about her the entirety of her political career. Can you recall her ever saying anything, anything that was actually supportive of our right to keep and bear arms? Ever?
No, she never has. And believe me, if she did, she'd be pulling it out right now to try and bolster her, quote unquote, her change of position, so to speak, but not her change in values. She's totally anti-gun rights. She's a gun prohibitionist. There's no two ways about it. But she knows, Cam, that in those battleground states she needs to win, gun rights is meaningful in those particular states. So this election isn't being held in New York City, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. You know, that what's going to determine the winner is, you know, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, you know, Arizona, Nevada. She knows in those states her message doesn't sell. So she's trying to camouflage it. You are right.
So what are your concerns? What are you worried about if we get four more years of Biden-Harris? I guess in this case, Harris Walls.
Yeah, well, I think my biggest concern is the courts. If we have 4 or 8 years even of a Kamala Harris administration, nominating and having Democrats in the Senate confirm anti-gun rights judges, we are in big trouble. Biden has almost erased the margin of, you know, that we gained under Donald Trump. And if Harris comes in and gets to, you know, nominate more anti-gun rights judges to the federal bench, we are in big, big trouble. All these lawsuits the Second Amendment Foundation has filed are going to be, you know, losing cases. And all the ones we've already won are going to get, you know, shredded and ripped up. So I'm most concerned about that more than anything. You need 60 votes in the Senate to actually, you know, pass anti-gun legislation because of the filibuster. And of course, they're trying to get rid of the filibuster. She's trying to get rid of the filibuster, too. But it's a little harder for them to push anti-gun legislation. And as we know now, we're getting court victories on a lot of their executive actions and executive orders as being unconstitutional. So the courts are where the battle's really moving to, has moved to, and under Kamala Harris, the courtroom door could be shut in our face.
Absolutely. In the Supreme Court this term, I think next week, oral arguments in Vanderstock, which is taking on the ATF's rule on unfinished frames and receivers, treating them as finished firearms. And then all eyes are on, I guess it's Snope now, right? Snope versus Brown, the challenge to Maryland's ban on so-called assault weapons. The Supreme Court's going to be deciding whether or not to grant cert to that case, probably here in just a few weeks. I think Maryland's reply brief is due later this month. Then the court will take up that case in conference. Do you?
I can for a second before
sure.
I as well, I'll talk about the Supreme Court. That's on October 8th, you're right. But on October 10th is also our Pennsylvania suit, denying 18 to 20-year-olds getting carry permits, is scheduled for conference at the Supreme Court as well. So October for us is a busy month at the United States Supreme Court. We have a couple other cert petitions pending. You mentioned the Snopes from Maryland. There's a couple more coming up as well. We just filed yesterday an emergency cert petition with the U.S. Supreme Court over our gun show restrictions in California, where we sort of won the case at the lower court level, but then we had some problems at the appeals court level, and they've taken out the injunction against the state from enforcing it. And so we've had an emergency petition to the Supreme Court to look at that right now and to grant us the injunction.
Yeah, I mean, again, as you say, there are a number of cases here that the court could, and I would argue should, accept. Do you have any inkling, any thoughts on what the court might do? I mean, and what happens if the court passes by these cases this term out?
Well, they're going to be taking something, and one case could impact all the others as well. So they don't have to take them all. But I think on the oral arguments on October 8th on Vanderstock, on the frame and receiver challenge, I believe we're going to win that. And then, of course, they should be taking something else. I hope they take Snopes, because that case on the Maryland assault ban has been to the Supreme Court twice, you know, and reversed and remanded and sent back down to the lower courts. The Supreme Court itself hasn't made a ruling. Now it's their third time. All the things that got in the way of them making a ruling is gone. Now it's just a surely merits argument. And so I'm hoping they take that one. And then there's a bunch of others. So, you know, they can expand the Bruin ruling, so to speak, to cover other areas by taking any one of these cases, so to speak. So we're on the offensive, not the defensive. And that's really great.
Absolutely. And again, in all of these challenges, the supposed Second Amendment supporter, Kamala Harris, hasn't offered any support to undo any of these gun control laws, right? The supposed Second Amendment supporter is just fine with all of these laws that we are trying to take off the books, which says, I think, everything about how much Kamala Harris really supports the Second Amendment. Unlike you, Alan Gottlieb, 50 years of the Second Amendment Foundation protecting, preserving, and frankly, restoring our right to keep and bear arms all across the country. Congratulations on 50 years of the Second Amendment Foundation. I'm glad that it was such a great gun rights policy conference. And again, thank you for everything that you're doing to help keep a right to keep and bear arms strong.
Thank you, Cam. And thanks for all you do, because if the message doesn't get out to our people, they don't know any of this is happening. So your efforts are extremely important to the gun rights movement.
No, I appreciate that very much. Alan, look forward to talking to you again very soon. Thanks so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
My thanks once again to Alan for joining us on the program. And again, just go to the Second Amendment Foundation's YouTube page. You can check out all of the speeches from the Gun Rights Policy Conference over this past weekend in San Diego, California. And knock on wood, I'm going to be able to make it to GRPC next year. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. Let's start there with a case out of Rochester, Minnesota, where a man has been sentenced for a drive-by shooting and attempted armed robbery in Rochester. Not much of a sentence, though. 20-year-old Christian Avery Miller had originally been charged with first-degree attempted murder, drive-by shooting, second-degree assault, aiding and abetting first-degree robbery, and aiding and abetting second-degree assault with a dangerous weapon. But he took a guilty plea to one count of drive-by shooting and simple robbery, and he has been sentenced to probation. According to KIMT Channel 3 in Minnesota, Miller, along with 20-year-old Anthony Lavelle Frazier Jr. and an unidentified juvenile male, were involved in gunfire directed at an occupied vehicle back on September 25th of last year. Law enforcement says a victim went to the hospital with injuries from the vehicle's shattered windshield. An unoccupied vehicle also was shot at, and the two shootings were related. According to the local TV station, Miller, Frazier, and that unidentified juvenile also arrested for an attempted armed robbery that took place a couple of days prior, September 20th of last year. Law enforcement say the three went to a mobile home park to supposedly sell a video game console system, but tried to rob the buyer instead. Investigators said the buyer drove away while the unidentified juvenile shot at him. According to court documents, the juvenile admitted to the robbery attempt, said he got the gun from Miller, and that Frazier was driving the car. Miller, after taking that guilty plea, sentenced to 5 years of supervised probation and 200 hours of community work service. Frazier's next court appearance scheduled for October 16th. He's also accused of attempted first-degree murder, drive-by shooting, second-degree assault, aiding and abetting first-degree robbery, and aiding and abetting second-degree assault with a dangerous weapon. So again, here we have another case of somebody who admits to being involved in a violent offense and gets no prison time whatsoever, no jail time, probation, community service. This is getting tough on violent criminals. And remember, Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, says, oh, I support the Second Amendment. Yeah, I mean, backs all kinds of gun control laws too now, right? But he's trying to present himself as a moderate. I'm not anti-policing. I'm not anti-law enforcement. I mean, it seems like there are some judges anyway in Minnesota, maybe some prosecutors too, who are anti-consequence for violent criminal acts. And I don't expect we'll see Tim Walz complain about this sentence. I'd love to be proven wrong, but I don't think we're going to see it. On to today's Armed Citizen story from, where was this? Jonesboro, Arkansas, where police have arrested a 19-year-old who was shot while trying to break into his ex-girlfriend's home. According to authorities, it was yesterday, Monday morning. Craighead County District Judge Tommy Fowler found probable cause to charge Montravis Finley with aggravated residential burglary. According to the court affidavit, it was this past weekend, Saturday, September 28th. Jonesboro police officers sent to a home on a report of a disturbance. When they got there, they spoke with the victim, who said that her ex-boyfriend, later identified as Finley, had tried to gain entry to the home through a bedroom window without her permission. The affidavit reads, while Finley was attempting to enter the residence, a male victim inside the residence fired a single shot, and Finley was struck. Police said that Finley then fled the scene in his vehicle. After they arrived at the home, detectives reported finding the scene to be consistent with the victim's report. Finley later found at a home in Jonesboro suffering from a gunshot wound. According to the affidavit, Finley admitted to detectives that he opened the window, had his body partially inside when he was shot. He was taken to a local hospital for his injuries, then taken into custody, currently being held at the Craighead County Detention Center. The judge in this case set bond at $150,000 cash or surety with a no contact order for the victim. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. I said yesterday, you know, we're going to see a lot of stories of heroism coming from these areas that were hit hard by Hurricane Helene, and we are starting to learn some of those stories, including one from North Carolina, where a man jumped into the floodwaters to save a woman who had been trapped in her home, but then apparently the home collapsed. NBC News reported Eddie Hunnell was in Grassy Creek, North Carolina. He was attending his son Austin's wedding this past weekend, and he actually saw the floodwaters pick up a house, a Leslie Worth's house. NBC News reports that video footage captured onlookers standing on the banks of New River screaming, "Are you there? Or jump?" And it soon became clear that Worth was stuck in the home. And Huddle said his mind raced through the options. He said, when it was happening, I was just trying to make a calculated risk. How do we save her? So he jumped into the water, life vest on, rope in hand. He told WRAL in Raleigh, North Carolina, "I grew up swimming on a swim team. I was a lifeguard, and I'm in okay shape, and I just couldn't watch her die. I felt like I needed to do that." And he was able to rescue Worth. She and her husband, according to NBC News, lost everything. I mean, their home destroyed in the flood, but they are grateful to be alive, and they were actually guests at the wedding rehearsal dinner for Hunnell's son, Austin, that weekend. A hot meal, in the kindness of strangers, at least. Hunnell says it wasn't until he went to bed that what he did actually hit him. He said, I lay down in bed that night and I had about had a panic attack, but I didn't see another option. You know, risking his life to save a stranger, I mean, that is undoubtedly an act of heroism and in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do. You know, I'm sure there are plenty of folks who say that Eddie Hunnell didn't do the right thing, right? That he would have been better off standing on the banks of the New River rather than putting himself at risk. But he thinks he did the right thing. I'm not one to disagree with him. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Eddie Hunnell, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I'm not going to be live blogging tonight's vice presidential debate at Bearing Arms, but I will be watching. Hopefully, the Second Amendment comes up as a topic of debate. And hopefully, J.D. Vance has the opportunity to remind the American people about Kamala Harris's anti-gun extremism. We will be covering anything that is said during the debate having to do with our right to keep bear arms at Bearing Arms this evening. We won't wait till morning, so we'll have rapid response for you if indeed that is a topic of debate tonight on CBS. 9 p.m. Eastern when the debate starts. And, of course, we'll, again, have a complete coverage of all of the 2A-related topics at BearingArms.com. Be sure to check out the website throughout the day. We're keeping up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information across the nation. Look forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow for another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.